Dumelang, Sanbonani. We celebrate Women's Month, and on this show this month, we'll be hosting Women of Influence, Women in Leadership. For many years as a country, we've been empowering our women. We've been forging the struggle to ensure that there is equality, to ensure that women have access to opportunities. In studio today, I have a woman who needs no introduction. Her name is Tshegofatso Motaung. She is the MD of Cedar Lab Media and Consulting. She holds a BCom degree from UKZN and master's degree in global political economy from the University of Sussex. She began a career in corporate work in the corporate world, in the mining sector and the financial services as well. Her passion for social development saw her lead an NGO and practice in youth politics to furthering her studies abroad. She is the former spokesperson of the New Nation movement that brought us the independent candidates. She was at the forefront of that case. She's also the former chairperson of COPE. She's a businesswoman. She's in trading. She's traveling across the continent. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bafana, for invite.
I'm trying to go through like, yo, this is you've done so much.
I think you are exaggerating some facts, right? I'm joking. I think just to correct something, the chairperson of COPE in Gauteng for youth, not lest I have comrades coming after me. This was also at the start of the political party
in 2008.
Yes, So I was the first youth leader.
That's amazing.
I still can't believe I did that, but hey. Back when we were young.
looking at your profile, there's a lot of things which you have done here. But one thing for sure, you are a professional. You are in academia. But let's start where you come from. Who are you? Where are you from? And what is the inspiration behind this broad bio?
So I am Tshegofatso Motaung. I grew up in Mututlung. I don't know if you know that. It's just outside Brits. But then I moved to Mabopane and I studied. I did my high school, Tshego High School. Tshego has some of the most wonderful people that are doing great things today. It was a Roman Catholic school that was very disciplined and strict. So at that time, we were privileged to have the contribution made by the church in improving education of black people at the time. And our school was very good, you know. And then, went to study in Natal. But I think every time I look back, I always say, career guidance was needed. I don't think I should have done accounting. it was the most frustrating thing I ever did. Mm-hmm. But, I'm also just grateful for the opportunities it opened, working in finance. I worked, for the banks. Mm-hmm. And I always comfort myself by saying, accounting is a hard skill. So you don't just wake up and feel like accounting. Yeah. It's something you just sort of need to do. But I think maybe with better guidance, I shouldn't have bothered myself.
But how did you end up at the University of Sussex? How did you do that?
So that's another thing, that to cope with my accounting depression or frustration.
Yeah,
because I've always really been involved in when I was in varsity, I was part of the student management council. So I've always been involved in leadership, be in different spaces. I think it's in hindsight you realize that this thing comes so naturally, and perhaps it needed to be channeled. So. Then after, when I was working, I came across Young Business for South Africa. It was an NGO started basically to try and encourage young people not to leave South Africa at the time, of the transition. So the whole YBSA was about inspiring South African youth to stay engaged in the country. So I participated, and because I enjoyed it so much, I eventually became one of the directors and the chairperson eventually. And we would host events with different companies, the CEO of Standard Bank, and we would have the high commissioners, but we would have conversations about things that affected South Africa, just to help people to think broadly.
Makes sense.
You know, so that's why I'm saying that's how I was coping, as when I finished doing my financial reports in the office, because of my passion for national development, that was how one of the things that I did. And it really impacted a lot on my career and opened up, you know, the world in terms of broadening my understanding as well.
Is that how you end up serving at the British Foreign Office?
So what happened was, remember when President Mbeki was removed?
Yes.
Remember, maybe you were still young when Abafana.
I remember that time when Zuma became so famous with Mshiniwam. Yes.
So we had a YBSA event that was scheduled that end of September with the then High Commissioner, the UK High Commissioner, Paul Boateng. And I mean, we had planned, you know, we would have a schedule of these events. It was taking place at the JSE here in Sandton. And I think it was literally maybe a week, but a few days after that. So he came, he spoke to us, whatever the speech we had planned, whatever that he spoke. But the entire meeting was, what do you think is going to happen?
Because we got tense.
Yeah, it was quite tense that, you know, here we are. And it was quite well attended. It was pre-Facebook. So we lost a lot of some of the records of some of the great initiatives that we did. And immediately the conversation became about the politics of South Africa. You know, South African, in the auditorium were young professionals working different private companies. And he gave us, it was encouraging one, because he's been around and he knows global politics. He just began to give us different countries where presidents were removed and things sort of moved on, etc. But the challenge he made was that, you see, you guys can be comfortable to sit here and do your jobs, or you can participate in the running of your country. Because in South Africa, I mean, especially at that time, it was almost like you have the bright and brilliant in private sector. And you know, we just leave the private sector, I mean, the public sector to whoever.
To comrades.
And we were not investing, you know, as much as we should have in the beginning, or on that, you know, developing a pipeline of leadership and professionalizing things. So it was a challenge for me personally.
Yes.
To say, you know, am I going to sit and be a couch commentator? You know how much
with your cappuccino.
Yes. Or are you going to get involved? And I think it just also took me back to how I ended up getting involved with YBSA. That YBSA, when I joined it, was predominantly, you know, white. And I felt, no, but we need diversity, the way they do things. And the thing, they challenged me to say, you know what, we only do what we know how to do. We work with the networks that we have. Come and join us, and then let's see how we can bring in the diversity. So that's just when I thought, you know what, we can complain that the politicians are like this, but maybe it's time to get involved. And Lord, well, that was it.
And I guess that's when you went into COPE.
That's when I went. That's what I, and then COPE launched, that I was invited. And because people knew me from YBSA, remember, you must put together a leadership team of people who don't know each other.
Yes.
So some people who used to attend YBSA meetings, they're like, oh, let's just nominate this one. So, I mean, it was a Thursday. I've never seen such a radical change. Thursday evening, I get an email at about 5 o'clock, or just before I left the office, I go to this meeting. In this meeting, I get nominated. I don't even know what it means to be the convener for the
provincial convener.
It was for Johannesburg, right? Okay, that's Thursday night. From there, we move from there to another meeting. Okay, I'm tired. Get to the office the next day. My phone is ringing nonstop. I'm like, what's going on?
Comrades are calling.
I'm thinking, what's going on? So I had to put it on silent. I'm thinking, what? what's going on? No, no, you need to be here. And I'm like, okay, I get to the meeting after meeting after meeting. Mm. By Saturday, I was like, no, I made a mistake.
This is not my place. This is not my place.
I mean, you know, and before you knew it, I think then on, so I called somebody and I said, listen, I think I made a mistake. One of the guys, I think I made a mistake. I don't think I want to be part of this. He says, listen, Tsego, we chose you in a meeting. So you need to attend the next meeting.
You're a leader.
And then come and resign in the meeting. You guys. And I'm thinking, what? So then the next meeting was on a Sunday. So my life was just now completely thrown out of my normal, nice routine. So I go to this meeting. And but, you know, before I went to that meeting, I went to church and I'm like, I think I made a mistake. I need God. Divine inspiration. What do I do?
Yeah.
How do I get myself out of this? But, you know, I remember being challenged, you know, and I think that's where I realized that, you know, that our faith also plays a role in terms of, I was challenged. I mean, the person who was preaching, they didn't know anything, but that if you withdraw from engaging, sometimes we withdraw from the battle.
Yes.
You know, David would never have known that you could put. So I was more, I thought, okay, fine. It means I won't resign. So
you need a good preaching.
Yeah.
You need a good sermon.
I get to the meeting. Then they're like, okay, we just need to now choose the provincial leadership. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I remember one guy, Mgwene, who's now the MMC for safety.
Okay.
He volunteers to be the secretary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes to the chairperson, and there was another guy who volunteered himself. And then Malusi says, no, we need gender.
Malusi who?
I forgot. I'll remember. He was in the DA, the one who was in the DA in Western Cape.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll remember his
name. But he then says, no, we need a woman representation. And I'm the only woman. And I'm thinking, I was coming to resign, right? So I decided, I had now made peace that, okay, fine, I won't resign, but, you know, I'll stick around. So now they all look at me and it's like, okay. Women, and I just, now I'm like, okay, I said I was going to serve. That was the beginning of what I look back at and say, you know, talk about leadership training, talk about, you know, the stress, the things that one got exposed to. I realized that many people who manage big budgets just because they've been in a professional space do not actually fully comprehend how this nation is run.
Yes.
And that's why we can't make changes. Mm-hmm. And I think that experience, you know, there are things that I say, if I had not been there, I would not understand. Mm-hmm. I would not, you know, like I was saying, we look at even what's happening with the EFF today, you are like, I know there's a story behind the story, and there's also real human beings that are affected by these things. And sometimes we don't pay attention into that. So, yeah, that's how I got involved. And
it's quite a story.
Let me tell you the funny part, and maybe some of the people, if they hear this, they will laugh, because apparently the first meeting, then Malusi makes sure I'm not there. And I mean, I am clueless. You know, talk about, I don't attend to announce who the Gauteng chairperson is. And one of my friends was saying, we were up in arms. Who is this Sokopas?
Who is this one?
Who is he? And they just were angry to say, who is this? I had no idea. But I, you know, when he met me later, he realized, oh, it's me. Okay, he decided, no, let's support this girl and see what can be done. So that was an interesting experience, I think.
So a woman in from corporate world to politics, politics to NGOs, you've been around. And I think the question becomes, do you think, from that time to this time, do you think as a nation we have progressed in terms of women empowerment? Would you say you are one of the beneficiaries of that project of women empowerment?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a program of empowering women, right? Mm-hmm. But I think in hindsight, I just took a step of faith and participated and, you know, as in the space of leadership. But I don't think that we we take care of women leaders as mm-hmm. we ought to. And I'll tell you maybe a bit about how that ended, mm-hmm. you know. Okay. I think there's a lot of, and it's not just in politics, just even in the working environment, there's a lot of toxic environment, mm-hmm. you know, and we can end up destroying the very women we want to raise up. Mm-hmm. So I think there's the opportunity to serve, and I mean I don't know what was the motivation that Malusi did that, and mm-hmm. But I'm grateful that I got to experience politics from nowhere, literally, you know, coming from that place.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm gonna go to this part. Usually when people change like from one industry to the other, would you say, because when you look at like yourself, I'm trying to think of this other woman, my mind skipped me. She grew up in a circle of corporate, moved into politics, and she has been growing consistently, just like yourself. You know, you were doing well in the corporate world. You did well in leadership in terms of organizational. So when you look at the approach, does it require you to change, to adjust, to adapt?
No,
or is something that you are born with?
You have to be able to adjust into the different spaces. I think, like for me, after getting involved, I mean, I was so involved in the politics. Now I was not sleeping. I was, you know, and I could feel that it's affecting my mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. And well, at the same time at work, I was dealing with another drama. But, you know, where you find yourself in a space where you are being purged. And, you know, someone, one of the managers there was creating his own team, et cetera. So but it came at a perfect time because I really didn't have time
to be there.
So mm-hmm. the little time that you, but at some point I had to make a decision to say, you know what, I'm going to embrace this season fully. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I'm participating in a project of mm-hmm. campaigning for elections.
Yes.
Elections comes once in 5 years.
Yeah.
And I just thought, let me just be in it fully. Mm-hmm. And it was necessary, because I think that's another thing, that the other problem is, you know, when you go into that space, unlike comfort of being in a secure job, mm-hmm. there's also a risk factor on you as a person that you need to mm-hmm. be mindful of. So I think those are some of the other things that then affect you. But I was much younger at the time, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I could sort of, you know, I had the liberty of that, you know, without a lot of, you know, family responsibilities, mm-hmm. etc. So you can afford to take those risks. So I think it's important, especially with younger people, that we press them to bring as much out of them as possible, mm-hmm. so that, you know, they discover who they are, you
true,
know,
true.
In time,
yes,
especially
yes.
while people are still young.
Because development is very important. And I see here you spoke on the part of social development. What would you say was the key? What is the key issue that is nearer to your heart in terms of social issues in this country?
Well, there's a lot of... there's many challenges we face. I think 30 years later, mm-hmm. we could have been in a better place, but we are unfortunately not. Mm-hmm. The issue of economic transformation affects everybody.
Yes.
You know, so the economy has not transformed as it should. Mm-hmm. Our economy has not been growing as much as it should, mm-hmm. and as a result, the reality of it is that people who have tried to start businesses have not mm-hmm. grown.
Yes.
And you find also issues of corruption that have also been a major stumbling block into mm-hmm. Just development.
Yes.
Largely. So I think all these things, when you zoom into them, it's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It's leadership. It also goes into even why I ended up getting myself involved with New Nation Movement, because I was like, as long as political party bosses are in charge,
mm-hmm.
as long as they determine who gets what role and who goes to parliament to represent the people they don't even know.
Yeah.
As long as we have that, there's very little that we're going to change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people don't even know how we are being governed. I knew that the New Nation Movement, that case alone, was just one aspect of the necessary mm-hmm. reforms that we need yes. around the elections. But it's the first thing to mm-hmm. to even bring it to the people's understanding that you are being represented by somebody who doesn't even know your constituency well
yes,
enough.
Yes,
and then
yes.
how do we expect to hold them accountable? We can't hold any one of them accountable.
Yes.
You know, if they are favored by their party boss, they'll still be in those mm-hmm. in those positions. And I think those are the things that we, you know, you look back and say, we need to do more to help this nation and the voters to take back literally their power.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
And hold those who are being elected accountable.
I'm going to go to this part where when you look at the issues of women in this country, like your gender-based violence, your mental health, and over the years, people have been, you know, complaining that a lot has not been done to protect women. A lot has not been done to empower women. We still have a lot of single parenting taking place within our communities. All these issues are more prevalent in a black and colored, actually across the country, basically. How do we fix it? How do we do it through development? Do we do it through education? How do we fix this part?
Yeah, that's where I say, you know, at the end of the day, before we talk about politicians, we talk leaders out there.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with individuals, and I think a sense of everyone's individual purpose,
mm-hmm.
and then our corporate purpose as a nation, and
yes.
you know, what is the sense of our destiny? Where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just maybe talk a little bit, because I just came back from Rwanda again, and you know, every time I go there, I see what is possible. That actually, it's possible to. Mm. Here is a country that 30 years ago, exactly 30 years ago, when we were busy celebrating and partying that we are free,
mm-hmm.
they were weeping because of the genocide.
Yes.
And the scenarios for Rwanda was that two things was going to happen, is that there was just going to be unending conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones who suffered will have to come back
yes.
and fight, and this was going to be
an ongoing thing. Yeah.
But leadership rose in that country that has helped people to get to a place where every person, nobody talks in Rwanda about I'm a Hutu, I'm a Tutsi. It's not even allowed.
Mm.
Today you have Rwandans.
Okay.
And there's a sense of a common destiny
yes.
that everybody has.
Mm, mm.
If I ask you, and you know,
mm-hmm.
what does it mean for me and you to be a South African? Do we have a sense of our common identity?
Mm,
or,
mm.
or what does it mean for us?
Yeah.
You know, the divisions have actually become worse.
Yes, yes.
In
yes.
our nation.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a time where even if you didn't have much, you knew that you were part of this nation that is alive with possibility, and there was a mm-hmm. hope.
Yes, yes.
But that has been crushed.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, that has been crushed. So the problem now is that the disappointments, the and also the trauma of apartheid. We didn't really invest time as a nation to deal with the trauma of apartheid. I mean, some of the programs I learned that that were done in Rwanda, there was, I mean, it was quite deep with them, and it all happened within mm-hmm. a short period of time. But what happened in South Africa was equally traumatic.
Yes.
And it took place maybe over a period of time. Maybe we can forget, but if you count the number of people that were killed during the time of apartheid, the impact, we didn't invest in the process of healing the psyche of the South African.
And
be
I think,
it white, be it black, because the white are also suffering the trauma of living in South Africa during apartheid. So we've not really dealt with. So we are dealing with trauma in
and
our country.
Just,
and then it comes out in violence. And then when violence happens, it's like, oh, it's violence against women. No, it's not just about violence against women. There is trauma that is coming out as violence. And if you're a foreigner, we say, no, it's xenophobic. No, it's just trauma and it's violence. And until we prioritize the healing process in our nation, we will build beautiful city, sentient buildings, etc. And we'll have to build bigger walls every time because you must now put more security. You know, I walked at in Kigali. It was 11 o'clock, 11:30 to where I was staying, because I actually deliberately not called the taxi because the president said you can walk freely, and I saw it. It's not
a crime.
No, it's not a PR statement. You know how our politicians, and I'm not saying this because anybody has you know, Bafana, what I saw, and I think that's when I realized that the issue of safety and security in our nation is key. Young people work, some of them, they work in hotels, they work in restaurants, and they can afford to live closer to the, and then at night they walk. I mean, it was like, you know, I don't know, but what was stroller?
Or just chilling.
And I'm like, it's 11 o'clock, 11:30.
They're not looking around, and then you see two
girls are walking, and they are not doing this because of it's their normal life. And I just thought, think about what that impacts in terms of our economy. I mean, one of the girls that I liked, Ruth, she's a photographer, and she can go and have her gig and walk
back home.
Yeah, no one is going to steal your camera on your way back.
Sure.
So you can actually have a life. So the issue of healing, of trauma, then how we resolve conflict, you know, we resolve, we don't know how to resolve conflict because of all these traumas. When you speak something, it's because you are white, I'm ready to fight you.
Yes.
And then, and I said, you know what? So we still have all of that.
I'm going to, the thing is, last time I spoke to one of the ladies, Marisokas from ACDP, and I said, and speaking to what you said about healing, to say we were raised by broken parents, who themselves were raised by broken parents. And right now we are in a state whereby we are on autopilot. We are just trying to do this parenting thing the best way we know how. We're just trying to do life as it comes, not necessarily intentional with a plan in place. One looks back on the TRC, how it was. There's more about building unity, forgiveness. But I feel like it's a PR stunt. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, we didn't do justice to that process. In fact, one of the leaders, Dr. Rutai Ziwe from Rwanda, he was charged with studying different nations to develop a model to help the nation heal. And they looked into our process of healing as part of developing a program for Rwanda. And also they highlighted that, you know, the concept that the truth and reconciliation that we had was good, but the problem in actually
implementing,
seeing through, you know, there were people in the process of TRC that needed to be paid money, and those things were not honored. You know, when part of healing is
justice,
it's justice. So if that also is not done, when you don't honor some of those, and then another thing is that even after that, then there's land claims that we are sitting with that we have not resolved. Do you know the impact of dispossession and landlessness? And these things we've not actually fully appreciated the level with which it has actually destabilized. And as long as people are crying, long as there's still a cry for some justice, even if, you know, maybe now we are so traumatized that we can't scream anymore.
we just let it go.
Like, you know, we can't, because there's just so many things. Every week, you're like,
And then
because of that, it doesn't take away the impact in the people. So, indeed, our parents suffered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a time where we thought there was hope. Mm-hmm. And when that hope is dashed, it does a lot. So the impact of having a country where men are not working or earning as they should, it affects the structure of the nation.
Of family.
And I think, you know, you need a leadership that cares. And I think, you know, you really need somebody who will
who's in love with power for the people. Not that in love with power, but in love with serving the people.
Well, you know, I'll give you one example. And really, guys, I do think that we must celebrate and give credit where it's due. Some of the things that, you know, one of the stories that I just learned was just even how they were resolving issues of conflict. Because remember, after the people left Rwanda, others came back. I mean, their homes were empty. And then those who came back just, So now, as part of now, we are building a nation and they are calling everybody else to come back. Now you come back, you find people are in your house. And so there was a lot of those conflicts. But, you know, the way that was resolved, and that, you know, it was at the time, apparently the president had dedicated a day that if all systems have failed on, was it Wednesdays or something, people could come to bring matters.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is, if you know that you've got that level of commitment to ensure that we will resolve, how many land claims could we have resolved in 30 years? Just simple land claims. There are people who have a land claim. They've not been able to access the land. And now, who's going to resolve that?
Sure. And I mean, our government
we've got people, I mean, I know communities that are saying this is our land, and they were still up and down. And while that was happening, others came and settled. Now, you need to think about the conflict. Now it will be black on black.
Yes, because now once they give you the land, you will tell them to move. Once you move, it's going to be something else.
So what I'm saying is that you need a leadership that really, really cares. Like, you know, where people just forget about anything, but to say, and I'm hoping to talk to one, somebody's listening, to say, even if you are there for whatever your objective, but just decide that I'm going to make an impact.
Even if you are stilly, but just have one thing that you are passionate about,
and not just for PR, on Twitter, but for the honest genuineness of seeing lives of people change.
True. I'm going to this part. The girl child in South Africa today, we have a culture of slay queens. We have culture of feminists. We have culture of women who are baby mamas, baby daddies, right? things are changing as time. Now marriage is no longer the in thing. It's more like right? Should we be worried about family values? Should we be worried?
No, you know what? You cannot build a nation without building families.
Mm-hmm.
And the day when we begin to, like we are, trying to restructure and redefine family, you must just be assured that your nation is not going to stand.
Mm.
And we are victims as a nation of families that were destabilized.
Yes.
Because, you know, apartheid was our leaders were arrested, fathers were pulled out of homes. As a result, we have generations of broken family.
Yes.
You know, but there were still some, you know, values of community, even those are being broken. So we must go back to the ancient paths. There's no other way, you know, that you will build. without building the people. And I think, you know, to contrast our 30 years, you know, with Rwanda, we've built a lot of infrastructure in South Africa. But, you know, I think they've built a lot of their people. And now the nation is ready for those big infrastructure projects because the people
are ready.
And I think that's what we then perhaps for the next 30 years as a country, we must now invest in building the people. That is what I think we need.
But how do we bring back that bosadivoli, the womanhood, you know, women who be proud to be mothers, who be proud to be wives, who would be proud to serve their communities and the gembabogade in-laws, people who fantasize with the idea of a nuclear family. Because as time goes by, it looks like it's become an optional thing, not necessarily a necessity.
Yeah, no, all of that, Bafana, will, one, you need the role models, those that celebrate and appreciate the value of family to begin to, maybe you were just minding your own family up until now, but because there's a crisis in the nation, perhaps it's time for some extending yourself beyond just your own family, you know. So you need those role models, those mamas that are still able to speak out. You know, it's a concern, you know, where sure it's a concern, but I know that it will take the right leadership rising up, you know, to be able to model, because you model this.
The nation.
Yeah, you model this. But if you guys vote for Slay Queen, what do you expect? Like, what? That's what they will.
Yes.
You know, if that's what you do, then that's the kind of leadership. And I must say, part of it is I think we need to check our media. I think that, you know, there are some productions that I would scrap if
I don't want to ask you which name, but
there are some channels that if I were to be able to make the decision, I would close them because they are not serving the development need of an African child. And they are just perpetuating things that are destructive.
Yes.
You know,
and
we laugh. I think this is the part I can't stand it. I can't believe people laugh at some of the productions that come out of our nation, and we are then exporting that into the rest of the continent as well, because it's like we are deliberate to change the mindset and make abnormal behaviors normal. We are normalizing everything that is contrary to the development of Africa
and even to African our values. Child. I think I can even think of one channel right now, but I won't say their name. They might call me one day. You know, but I've always been questioning that even the women today who are seen to be speaking or speaking for women of today, these women are so angry, they're so bitter, you know. And you think to yourself, and there are young girls out there who take what they say as gospel truth, and now you end up seeing relationships not waiting, marriage is not waiting.
Unfortunately,
everybody's out for themselves.
You know the guys, I think you'll forgive me. I'm still on my bus from Rwanda. Guys, you know one thing, talking about this thing of bitterness and angry, and you know I always say I can't even be angry when I'm in Rwanda. The people are so gentle. There is like a determined. It's like everyone has decided we're not gonna fight. So even if the you know how you be like
yes,
even that just sort of you get dislodged from that because there is like nobody is wanting to engage in a fight. Yeah, because we are aware of where we come from, and therefore there has been some way that people are like
on.
We are not going. So this picture of Black woman, angry, bitter.
Feminism.
No, I think that it's also a sign of trauma. Because we can resolve issues without having to to portray that. Yes. So when you see people angry and that level of bitterness, you know, showing mm-hmm. up there, it's a trauma. It's true. It's pain. It's pain that has not been attended to.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you protest, it's not going to stop. You understand?
Certainly.
And I think we've been so much focused on protests, action, etc. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of internal work that we need to do as
individuals. The mindset needs to shift.
Yeah, we need to have sessions where we have to deal with issues of trauma and healing. That thing cannot be underestimated in terms of the impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because broken leaders, they break. You find managers that are frustrating everyone in companies. People are at work, and when you listen to stories, you can hear that even people have positions, but they are traumatized as leaders, and they lead.
They are there for their money and just to.
Yeah.
But,
so I think that we must. I don't know how, but there needs to be
a
level of national healing. And I think for me, that thing that I saw was that we don't even think we need it. I think that is the part, and I realize that when you see how other people live in other nations, you see that actually it's normal for people to be law abiding, people to have clean streets. No, to have clean streets. You know, I'm not talking clean streets.
I hear you.
People to be. This is not. You know, people are not coerced. They want to do it because they've gone through.
It's the culture. I remember when I went to Israel. I'm gonna say it either way. When I went to Israel, so with a group of guys, so they are charging their phones downstairs. We are going upstairs for lunch. So like, no, leave your phones there. Charge
and
there.
Then charge your
like,
phone.
I'm charging. Yeah. No. Get it cheap, but no, it's safe.
Nobody is going to steal.
It shows the trauma that South Africa has. You think it's normal that every time when you get into the car, you must check your door, clicking, and people are parking their cars just by the driveway and sleeping there and waking up in the morning, the car is still there. I'm like, this man should never do this in Joburg.
So that's what I'm saying. The issue of trauma, we don't know the cost of trauma. All these high walls around you guys.
It's trauma.
And it's expensive. All this security, CCTV, all of it. All this alarm, all these subscriptions. We are paying that because we are not able to deal. Imagine if people could be okay and normal and nobody needs to steal anybody's anything, that we are safe. Johannesburg, you can walk the streets at night. How much it will unleash creativity. I saw it and I realized we don't understand the cost of having a traumatized nation.
Definitely. And I'm going to go to this part, something called mental health. It was in Popular a couple of years ago. My grandfather said it like a rona, but not mental health, even me growing up, I never heard it, but as we said, it's become a popular word, and which is true that people are dealing with a lot, either it's anxiety, what personality disorders. We grew up in a culture whereby if our grandpa was lying, you know, it's like he has went cuckoo, vescopis, we never really understood the issue of mental health. And now it goes to women, whereby we see a lot of women as of late abusing alcohol, abusing drugs, starting to do things that would be in the eyes of the people who were born in the 80s. Like, this girl, how can you do that? But as of recent, it's been normalized. So do you think mental health has always been there? It's just that you didn't have a look at it? Or do you think it's a new phenomenon?
It's the same thing that we're talking about. It's trauma. That it's all these stresses that come with all the challenges of the state of our nation, right? Compounded by now we've got money, you know, you've got women that access, you know, back then when we grew up, I mean, I didn't know much about drug dealing back then. There was no access to that. So you wouldn't have as much.
Yes,
alcohol was there. In fact, alcohol was deliberately also done and given to black people as a way. Because also when you destabilize people's ability to think, they won't be thinking about being free. So it was a payment that would be given to blacks to just make sure that, you know, pay them with alcohol just so that they keep, they don't engage in anything. that's some of the history.
Yes.
So part of it, we've then socialized it, and then, you know, it becomes an escape. We market it nicely, you know, just like, you know, just relax. And
Keep it under the ropes.
Sometimes it starts off as a nice social thing, but others then they get, unfortunately, found themselves, you know, abusing alcohol. But again, issues of mental health, I say they also go back to the state of not being well as a nation as well, broadly.
Wouldn't you maybe blame that based on the upbringing, childhood-wise, that maybe the modern parents have been so busy that they've been neglecting their children and their children? Because I can't say they would have any trauma, those children, but because of they have no sense of belonging, they end up seeking comfort in such things.
Well, that contributes, but I can't say I blame one thing over. There's multiple factors in all of this. But the issues also of not being present as parent is also raising up a generation that is supervised by TikTok and all the social media. And that contributes a lot also to now having children. I mean, I saw a study that was saying that, you know, children that are overly exposed to screen time and social media, etc., the impact on the brain, you know. So those things, in the next few years, you'll have a whole new generation of people who have a sickness we never had because they are now excessively exposed. But parents just can just buy all these gadgets because
to keep them
they're
quiet.
Busy, then we don't fully monitor. But we live in this world, unfortunately, where this is the world we are living in. It's a digital age, and we cannot quite disconnect from it.
Yes.
But then how do you manage it? How do we try to protect the children? So it's important to look into that so that you avoid finding children later on that are not well, because that produces new diseases that we will now having to the issue of wellness all around, you know, it's important. And I realize that when a person is at peace and you are well, you actually can begin the process of building. But when we are trying to, when we neglect the wellness, the well-being of a person and a nation and a community,
putting up
infrastructure development, they end up sitting there as white elephants. That's why.
They end up coming to bend them when they want water.
I'm
going to jump into this one, and I'm speaking on behalf of gentlemen. Not my words, on behalf of gentlemen.
Yeah.
Please make us understand what is different about independent women. How do we deal with independent, powerful? I'm just saying, you being in the corporate world, probably you have been to school. Gentlemen, they're struggling out there compared to say in China, man. Hey, she's a good girl, man. Hey, she's a lawyer, she's this, she's study, she's that. I can't control this woman.
Why do you want to control her?
I can't lead here. I can't lead.
So the problem is that you have not been prepared to lead.
Yes.
Empowered.
Our forefathers never had a woman who was a lawyer. They only had Kidibono, Nakundu, Nebana. So now I can't tell my granddad and my wife gives me a problem.
So what do you want? What is the question?
No, like, how do we build, how do we navigate relationships and love and family with such women?
I wish I knew.
Gentlemen.
I wish I knew, but you
it's
know.
A wrap.
No. But you know, I always say that, you know, yeah, it's not an easy one. And I think personally, I'd say the journey of healing helps. because some of the what we call independence is not really right. Some of the is trauma. So some of it is trauma. But then also we need, I think another thing I realize in this project of building the nation, when we invested a lot in empowering women, which is good, I think that there was a neglecting of
men.
Of empowering men, because you cannot do away with the role men play in a society. So I think we missed a gap in our nation. In the beginning, the focus became so much on empowering the women. And part of it I understood because, you know, both men, they stayed at home, looked after the kids. But to reorganize and to have a strong nation, you need strong leaders, strong men, men who can lead with integrity and be confident, men who can earn enough well. You know, I mean, I remember watching the statistics and looking at how much a black man earns versus a white man. That's a problem.
True.
You understand?
Yes, yes.
So when an average black man is not doing well, it's not good for the for everyone. So I say that that's one of the things. We need to get our men having money, guys, and not blame. I think also we need to also understand that the effects of apartheid, guys, were so, it was so thoroughly done that some of these things cannot just happen by themselves. We have to sort out the issue of the economy. If Bafana does not have money, you don't have confidence to go to that lawyer again.
What are you going to do? Understand?
So, I'm saying that, so those are realities that if we are going to build a nation, strengthen the well-being of the men, help invest in their own well-being, lest they become taken by the corrupt, through all
because
those.
A man providing is central to the man's nature. And when you can't provide or you feel like you cannot,
so I'm there for free. I'm happy to help start up the men's empowerment movement. I think it's necessary because with time I realize that. Gosh, I don't want to do things myself. I also want to relax and be taken care of. You understand? So you don't.
I tell you no, but I don't need a man in my life.
Maybe it's young people. They're still gonna grow up. and then we can have.
They'll get to understand these things.
We can have.
No, Mamuta woman. Thank you so much for coming through. Before I even let you go. These independent candidates that you have given us today didn't do much with the last election, but that opened the door towards holding leaders accountable, civic education as well, for people to understand the power of their vote. And I feel like we still have a long way to go as a nation. But just give us a background on what is the inspiration behind running this case, taking it to court.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the New Nation movement is an example of just how ordinary people, like literally ordinary people like me, can participate in doing things that can change the course of the nation.
Yes.
So the case was taken to court by Dr. Michael Louis, and he approached Mamelinda. I was with her at the airport, I remember, in Cape Town, and says, I'm going to do this. Okay, let's take the case. And when he shared, I knew about it because when I worked for, after COPE, we went and set up Dr. Dandala's office in Cape Town, the COPE parliamentary leader. So myself and Onkopo Tsetabane, we were the team behind at the beginning of Reverend Dandala. So I got to learn when we got to parliament that about the whole reform the state of the electoral system, and that it needed to be changed. In fact, there was an article that Nelson Mandela had written published in the Sunday Times some years back that one person brought to say we need to change the electoral system because it was transitional, and that thing never happened.
Okay.
Why? Because the current one works for the party bosses. You choose who becomes, etc. And then changing it becomes
something else. Luthuli House was enjoying its power.
So it was quite nice, and no one, as long as that remained, nobody knew about it. So when I knew that someone had decided to take this, I mean, initially I was not interested, and then the case was, he had filed a case at the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court then threw it out to say, no, we are not the court of first hearing. It then went first. And then that's when New Nation, made up of people that would come, meet, you know, for prayers. It was mostly Christians that that were behind this. And then he engaged across the nation. And that's how they formed the New Nation movement. And I think when now the case was in progress, and I realized that nobody knew that there was such, the media was not talking about it. There was a clear, deliberate effort to make sure that a case like this, can you imagine a case that had the potential of actually, in fact, 2019 elections, had the courts not delayed, had the case been heard before May 2019, we would have, and they announced that this was unconstitutional. The elections in 2019 should have been delayed to have a reform or something. You know, and but political parties, that's what I realized.
Put it on the side.
They were like, no ways. The elections will, whether or not it's constitutional, we don't want to know anything.
You go ahead.
We want the elections.
Because I think we only heard about the case once it was won in the court of law, but the whole time behind the scenes.
So behind the scenes, I think it was around beginning of that year, because the elections were in May. That's when I was just now starting to work with the guys. Then we began to publicize, organize a number of media engagements, and you know, would cause press, will call press releases. Also, there was a delay. Remember, in the process, it sat at the Western Cape High Court for long, and it was just, I think around April, if I remember well, that they said, no, they are referring it back to the Constitutional Court. So remember, it started there. It was always a Constitutional Court matter.
Yes.
So that whole delay, you know, stole the possibility of seeing 2019 elections differently, you know, voted upon. Okay. And 2019 happened. We voted. And I mean, it's so funny. There's a political party. Maybe let me not go there.
That is all.
Let me not go there. There is a political party that I love today. Who the person who was leading, that they actually wrote to say, if you try to delay the, because if we take the case and have elections postponed, they are coming after us. Like we were, I loved it. I mean, I thought to myself, I realized that, you know,
take out the name.
We'll have to have another session one day.
Okay.
We'll have to have another session. I mean, so the case was opposed by the president, by the, I think, the justice minister. So you then realize that for a proper electoral reform, we need a serious change, because these bills must still go to the same parliament.
Yes.
Of the people who
don't want
it. So I knew. So for me, my you know, a purpose to get involved was like, South Africans must start thinking about it. I don't think I will be the only person only people who can make a contribution, but other people don't even know. But if they can know this is happening, then it can stir up, you know, people, and a number of other initiatives later were formed. And I felt, you know, my contribution was, let's make it known that there is a case that is in the courts. And then we worked with Wits University. Professor Glazer was so gracious in helping, in availing himself also to look into the different scenarios. So I realized that there is a need to invest in voter education. I wouldn't even call it just voter education, but conscientizing the nation about just how we are being governed. Mm. But you know what? Politicians are not going to do it because they want you ignorant so that you vote for them.
They call us clever blacks.
No, they don't want clever blacks.
Yeah, they want you to come with your soup kitchens and your...
But I think it's a very sad short-term, you know, view, because the well-being of the nation will be improved if people are empowered, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think I was happy. I knew that the winning the case, or, you know, having those words declared that the Electoral Act as it was unconstitutional, that was not going to resolve everything, because it still has to go back to parliament. And those people who refused it are going to do everything to stop it. And we saw... All we got was three ballots, and we it doesn't mean anything, because ultimately we still have political parties running the show. So I think that, you know, we need to look into this
and work more.
Yeah, no,
educate more people about it.
We need to look into that. There needs to be a serious change, but also the ordinary South Africans there's a lot that it goes back to the healing. Mm-hmm. To investing in the people, because now when the people understand
and
who they are,
then they
begin to take responsibility. And at the moment, the state of where we are, you can't even say we'll have a proper constituency representative.
Clearly, unfortunately, that would happen maybe in the next couple of years, but right now we don't have it. That's a sad reality. People don't vote because they are well informed. They don't vote because of policy. We vote because we love characters. We ever mix the loudest noise. They ever give us the food parcels. So I think the more we, as you said earlier, the more we build a common identity, which is South Africa brand, and actually be patriotic about our nation, maybe that's when you'll start to see more change. Let's hope so.
You don't want me to tell you the story of how my politics ended? Okay, we'll keep it there for a second.
We'll come back for part two. But for now, I'm going to give you a moment. This series is to celebrate women like yourselves who have been in and out, working hard. And the camera is right behind me. To the women out there, to South Africans out there, you have 2 minutes. Shoot. Happy Women's Month. Let's go.
Okay. South African women, beautiful women, women of great destiny. I always say that the reason that we find ourselves heavily, having many challenges, it's because there is greatness in every single one of you. So may this Women Month be a new beginning for all of you South African women, and with all the problems we are facing, this remains a beautiful country. It is our home. It is our inheritance, and we have nowhere else to go. So let's do all that we can to build it and make it a better place for our children and the children's to come.
Thank you. That's Tsego Motaung. Yes, as I've always said, if you empower a woman, you empower the nation. That's it from me. I am Bafana Modise, and this was Women's Series. Happy Women's Month, celebrating women. And tomorrow we'll have another powerful woman who is making impact in society. Other than that, let me see you next time, same place, same time. I am Bafana Modise. This is Podcast Party, where great minds don't think alike. Ciao, ciao.